This is a Farm Doc Daily podcast from farmdocdaily.illinois.edu. I'm U of I Extension's Todd Gleason. This week, Carl Zuloff from The Ohio State University, an ag economist and farm policy specialist, wrote an article for the Farm Doc Daily website about crop insurance and the upcoming current debate in farm policy that's taking place in Washington, D.C. There's been much discussion, Mr. Zuloff, about the decision whether or not to continue direct payments, most of it centering on not continuing. And then if that doesn't happen, what happens with those monies and how do they get readjusted, if at all, into the farm policy of the future? Can you take it up for me, please?
The issue of direct payments, I think, has three attributes that color the discussion. The first is that it's hard to sell, particularly to non-farmers, why farmers are receiving large payments when they have record income. The second component of the debate over direct payments is that it is well accepted that there will have to be cuts in the Farm Safety Net program. And there are largely two main pots of money that you can get those cuts from. One is direct payments, and the second is crop insurance. And in most, what you hear from most farmers, they view crop insurance as central to the Farm Safety Net at the present time. So in other words, there's a choice to, if you're going to have to cut, the choice would be to cut direct payments. And then third, there's a lot of discussion about the need to complement crop insurance, what type of program that should be. That's often referred to as the shallow loss program. And so you have to find the money to get to that. So I think the discussion on the elimination of direct payments is really driven by a set of considerations. And therefore, most people expect the direct payments to disappear in order to be able to meet each of those other three criteria. I would add just one thing, and that is that in my 30-plus years of doing policy, it is important not to prematurely assume that a program is going to disappear until it actually does disappear. Programs are in existence because they have substantive support, and so I think you have to be cautious about saying it, but clearly direct payments are under intense scrutiny.
Can you take me through the history of crop insurance from the 1990s forward?
Crop insurance is a program that actually dates the 1930s. It was a very small program. It wasn't even a relatively small program. It was a very small program into the early 1980s. It then began to grow, and around 1990 began to reach a size that would have made it a program that you would have taken notice of in terms of the Farm Safety Net. Since 1990, crop insurance has grown quite a bit. It has grown in terms of the number of acres that is insured. We've gone from roughly 100 million in the early 1990s to over 250 million today. At the same time that you've had this increase in the number of acres, you've had the net payments made by crop insurance continue to grow. And what I mean by net payments, that is the difference between what farmers as a group for the entire U.S. receive from crop insurance minus what they pay in as a premium. And so I refer to that as net crop insurance payments to farmers. They have grown. They were in 1990, we were, at a very small number, less than $500 million of net farm payments. We, in the 2011 crop year, will be around $5.5 to $5.6 billion in net farm payments. And 2011 will be the first time that net payments by crop insurance have exceeded direct payments So it's a program that is growing quite a bit. The other factor in understanding the growth in net payments is that there is a subsidy that the public pays, so the farmer does not pay the full premium. Another way of looking at this is that the full premium is equal to the subsidy provided by the public plus what the farmer pays. Hence, in almost all years, what farmers receive from crop insurance exceeds what they pay. And we've been over $1 billion in net payments for most years since around 2000. So just some perspective on the changes over time.
Not all farmers receive back as much as they put in. Is this correct?
This is correct. This is, in terms of the net payments, this is from the perspective of the United States. And for example, just to elaborate a little bit on this, in the early 90s, the farmers were paying, on average for the U.S., about 75% of what they were receiving back from the government. In other words, the share of premiums that farmers were paying was about 75% or three quarters. In more recent years, what farmers have been paying is about 40% of the total premiums. This is due to a variety of things, most prominently the fact that we as the public policy in this country have lowered the share of premium that farmers have to pay to encourage participation in crop insurance. But this is at the aggregate level. Crop insurance requires that you have a loss which exceeds your deductible. So if you have 75% coverage crop insurance, you would have to have a loss of greater than 25% to collect. In any year, even a year where there was large payouts by crop insurance, many individual producers do not have a loss that exceeds their coverage. So these are aggregate numbers that I have been talking about, not individual farms. In every year, there are a number of farms, many farms, that do not receive payments, even though for the aggregate farmers as a group, crop insurance is making payments.
Has it caused, do you suppose, more marginal areas to put crops in that they might not otherwise?
This is a topic of tremendous discussion. It's what we would refer to as economists as a distortion, and I refer to it as a potential distortion. The notion is that crop insurance, because there's a public subsidy for crop insurance, it reduces the insurance that you would have to pay if you were to fully pay for it. It particularly does so in the more risky production areas. So there's a very straightforward economic argument that if you're subsidizing the risk and you're subsidizing it more in more risky areas, you will encourage production in those areas. It also turns out that more risky production areas also tend to be more environmentally sensitive areas. So you can make the argument that link would happen, that crop insurance would be encouraging production in more risky areas. However, ultimately, you have to confront the data. It is an empirical question. You have a conceptual hypothesis, but does the data support it? And my reading of the literature right now is that there is not a strong consensus about empirically, but this is a growing issue of discussion. What kind of distortion effects are subsidies for crop insurance having? So we haven't answered this, in my opinion, but it's clearly a topic that lots of people are thinking about and working on.
There are two issues you believe that agriculture has set aside and does not like to discuss as it relates to crop insurance, for that matter, for almost all farm policies. they are conservation and tying conservation programs to farm policies in some form, or payments in some form, and then limits in some form. Why don't you take up the conservation issue first?
Okay. If you look at the farm safety net as a whole, one of the things that you observe is that there are issues associated with the farm safety net. And one of those is, should farmers meet conservation compliance, which means a set of standards, in order to receive farm program payments? This was an issue that we took up in 1985, in the 1985 Farm Bill. It was passed into law, and it applies today for any farmer who wants to receive direct payments, for any farmer who wants to receive marketing loans, for any farmer who wants to receive countercyclical programs, for anybody in the ACRE program, for anybody in the SURE program. You must meet conservation compliance. Crop insurance currently is not subject to conservation compliance. So you do not have to meet conservation compliance rules, and you can still retain eligibility to purchase crop insurance. The issue is that's under discussion, and I think is going to get even more discussion, is if crop insurance is becoming a central component to the farm safety net, which almost everybody agrees is happening, then is it appropriate and fair to also attach conservation compliance to that? This is an issue of great debate. Many in the farm community don't want to see that happen because it imposes a regulation on them. Of course, many in the non-farm community, particularly in the environmental community, want to see this happen. I see it as an issue of the centrality of the program and the accomplishment of objectives that extend beyond the farm sector, in this case to conservation. And I think, we're going to have a long debate over this. I do not know whether we will address it in this farm bill, but if we do not address it in this farm bill, I would fully expect it to come back up in the next farm bill.
And then take up limits. And for crop insurance, there are two possibilities.
Yes. Payment limits are an issue that, we're already beginning to see it emerge more and more. And I just would point to the fact that the Government Accountability Office, otherwise usually known as GAO, just released a report on crop insurance. And part of this report addressed the notion of limits on crop insurance subsidies. This is just an indicator that this issue is really taking front and center. Again, from the big perspective, we impose limits on payments from direct payment program, from the countercyclical program, from the ACRE program, and from the SURE program. The notion of society, you can interpret it this way, this is my interpretation, is this is a fairness question. Is it fair that large farmers are not capped in terms of the amount of payment that they receive? And this is an issue of fairness, and people come at it from that perspective. What it could occur in crop insurance is there are a number of ways you can implement payment limits. The two most likely would be that you limit the amount of payments that crop insurance makes. So in other words, if you collect, you can only collect so much indemnity. The other one is that you can limit the amount of subsidy that a farmer could receive, and that once that subsidy level is reached, then the farmer would have to pay the full or a higher proportion of the premium. Both approaches are being talked about. As an economist, I see the approach of limiting subsidies as a much more friendly way to implement this with respect to management. And what I mean by that is crop insurance is designed to make large payments when a very bad weather event happens. To then turn around and to limit those payments when farmers need them most is really to undercut the program and to make it much harder as a farmer to manage risk. If you limit the subsidies, the farmer knows this before he ever plants his crop, and that allows him to make adjustments in how he wants to manage the farm and how he wants to make the risk. And I want to emphasize here that I'm not arguing for payment limits on insurance. What I am arguing for is that if we as a country decide to place limits on crop insurance, I think we need to think carefully about how we do it because we could have unintended consequences on the management of the farm and the management of the risk if we don't carefully consider how we implement it.
Thank you so much for taking the time with us. We appreciate it.
Oh, you're welcome, Todd.
That's Carl Zuloff, ag economist and farm policy specialist at The Ohio State University. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.